In this bonus episode of Fictional Hangover, we discuss Indiana Jones, meatloaf, science fair projects, and natural lobotomies with Sophie Amos, narrator of My Calamity Jane, by Cynthia Hand, Brody Ashton, and Jody Meadows.
Hey everybody, welcome to Fictional Hangover, a podcast about young adult and new adult books, series and authors that is full of spoilers. I'm Claire.
And I'm Amanda. Just go dive straight in to this interview because it's fantastic. Everything about it is great. Ready? Go. Hopefully they won't be too ridiculous.
And we'll I like ridiculous.
To... That's good, because that's what we live for.
Yeah.
So, but hopefully...
I like doing the ridiculous ones. They're either horrific and horrible and the worst question you've ever been asked in your life, or stupid. There's no in between.
Yeah. I'm a fan of the really, really terrible ones personally, but you know.
It's a pretty fun and silly book, so I think something ridiculous is in order.
Yes, definitely. Definitely so.
Yeah, this is not Wild Girls. Wild Girls was horrific.
Yeah. Have you read that one? Yikes.
No.
Good book, but every terrible thing that can possibly happen happens.
Oh, God. I think I know both of the narrators, too.
We interviewed Jesse Walensky for that one.
Yeah, I've known Jesse for... going on 13 years now. We met in college. We didn't go to the same college. We studied abroad together in the same acting program. And then I didn't see her for about a decade. I mean, I was never close to her. And then we met at a voiceover conference and we had no idea that the other one, and now she's my work wife. I talked to her last night.
That's adorable.
Lovely. Love it.
I actually told her, I was like, yeah, I'm going to be with these women tomorrow. She's like, oh, tell them hi. Yeah. So I talk to her all the time. Yeah.
Yeah, I think we both have.
We love Jessie. We stalk her a little bit on social media
she's
now.
Awesome. She's good people. She's awesome.
You see, if you're nice to us, we will talk. If you're nice to us, even a smidge, we will stalk you on social media and promote you to hell. So yeah.
Sign me up.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
I just hit retweet all constantly now. Right. Okay. Let's do this.
Let's do. So, is it time? It's time.
Professional. It's time!
Woo! Yay! Oh my gosh, it's time! Pew, 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 so pew. Excited. And today is even more exciting because we have a special guest.
Why?
Sophie Amos is here and we love her because she did a fantastic job with this book. Yay! And there she is.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining.
Yeah.
Thank you for booming.
I'm glad to be here.
I'm gonna try not to fangirl.
Fangirl away, please. I'll take any. I'll take a boost to my ego anytime. Sure.
I just feel so awkward about it sometimes. Who else is so obsessed with voice actors and audiobook narrators? I feel like that's not something that everyone's like, oh my god, my favorite voice actor did this book. No, that's me all the time.
Yeah, I've been bragging to people all the time. It's like, did you know I've been talking to such and such? And like, who? Like, ah! And then just throw the catalogue at them. Check all these links.
Oh, man.
Oh, right. Okay, now, let's be cool. Let's be cool.
Cool, man. Be cool.
Be cool for once.
Be cool, man.
No.
Be cool. No. Calm down. Take a deep breath.
I can't. I'm a giant nerd. I know my people.
We're so just the nerdiest people in the entire world, but it's okay.
Aw, I like nerds. It's fine. Nerds are my favorite. I'm a pseudo nerd, I would say. I'm not, you know what it is? I would be full on nerd, but I don't have the encyclopedic thing that full on nerds can do, you know, where they can remember everything. Because I just such a high volume of work of books, once I've done a book, I have to say goodbye to it because there's no more room in my brain to take on the next project. So I feel like I don't have I feel like someone asked me the other day if I was a, oh, are you a Doctor Who fan? I'm like, oh, a total Doctor Who fan. But then like I realized that like I couldn't like state specifics. I could be like, David Tennant's my one, is my guy. But
mine's Matt Smith.
I have to say, I thought whenever I introduce someone to that series, I always tell them to start with that first episode he did, because it's a great introduction to Doctor Who if you don't know what it is. I don't know. I think that his first episode is quite good. But anyway, we're getting off topic.
Anyway, we're all giant nerds. Now we're talking about
Doctor Who. We can talk topic. You can be a nerd without encyclopedic knowledge of anything. I used to be able to quote word for word everything about Babylon 5, but I was a teenager. I didn't have things to remember then. And now I'm much older. I can't retain that knowledge. And to be a fan of anything, you just have to like it. You don't have to be so embroiled in the fan base and be obsessive about it. It doesn't matter. If you like something, you like something. You can call yourself a fan, you can call yourself a nerd. You don't have to be in so deep, because those are the scary realms.
I am a huge you don't want to be that deep. Poirot fan, Agatha Christie's Poirot, and I watched all that with David Suchet. Is my I would love to have dinner with him. But what I do is I watch, and especially the newer ones, the ones that came out like the last like seasons 8 or maybe seasons 9 through 11, like I really love them, but I have to wait. Like I watch them all, and then I wait. I call it the natural lobotomy, because I'll forget. Like if I can like watch the first few minutes and not be like, oh wait, that's that woman. That's the one who did it. And I'll be like, oh my god, I forgot this one. This is great. Yeah. I get to enjoy it like it's brand new. So that's what I was doing that last night. I was like, oh, this is great. I forgot how this one is.
I love the natural lobotomy.
I love that phrase.
That'd be my new favorite thing.
You just have to wait it out. You just have to wait it out. That's all you gotta do. It gets really, but then sometimes you like you tune in a little too soon. You're like, oh, I still remember. I have to wait longer.
Go do another couple audiobooks in between. You'll forget.
At least you can do that with Poirot, because you do spend ages. Well, yeah, and with Poirot, at least you do forget. If it's something like Columbo, you know instantly he's done it, because he instantly latches onto the murderer and gets them to help solve the murder. It's like, yeah, it's them.
Columbo, wow, that's some old school stuff there.
This is not the first
episode. I've been having a hankering to watch Murder, She Wrote, if I'm honest.
This is not the first episode where she's talked about these things. Anyway, I think we should play Would You Rather, personally. I think that's what we're here for.
I'm here for it, baby.
I mean, it's supposed to be the reason we're here for. Okay, so first question. We asked this on social media. Would you rather be Calamity Jane or Annie Oakley? And I'll throw the results out for you, which I was surprised by. On Facebook, 34% said Calamity Jane and 66% said Annie Oakley, which was exactly the same as Instagram, which freaks me out. And on Twitter, 43% said Calamity Jane and 57% said Annie Oakley.
Wow.
But most of the comments we got were in favour of Jane.
Interesting.
So I was quite surprised by that. So Annabelle Oakley on Instagram said, obviously Annie Oakley because I'm named after her. I would be upset if she went with Calamity. I think her parents might be upset if they went with Calamity. I love that one. Colin on Facebook said Jane because then I wouldn't have to change my trousers. Fair. Constance on Facebook said, when given the choice, who wouldn't want to be a spy? So, Calamity. Nina on Facebook said, Calamity Jane, showgirl, spy and handy with a whip. Yes, please. And Steph on Facebook said, I would love to be a cowgirl spy. So the vast majority of comments were in favour of Jane, but poll-wise was Annie. Very strange. What about you lovely ladies?
Well, for me, Calamity. I don't know why. It's not about the spy or not the spy. Just the general vibe I got of Jane. I liked wearing her skin for a little while. And she's just, I don't know, she's fun. She's this tomboy who just, is no frills attached. She is what she is, and I kind of like that about her. So Yeah. She was fun. She was fun. And she was fun to voice. She was fun to voice.
I also went with Jane, mostly because of the guru factor. You know, if you can, yeah, if you can be a guru, you should be a guru.
Oh, yeah.
With a whip, then doing whip tricks as a guru at the end. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm on board.
I like it.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I went with Annie. Because she's the best in the family and everything, and I would love to be the best in the family.
According to her, I would like according to her, let's remember that she is the one who's informing us that she's the best at everything she does in her family. I'm like, I want witnesses. I want to hear what the other members of the Oakley family. I mean,
I want testimonies. Grandpa Shaw probably would say no.
Oh God, yeah, what a creep.
Yeah, I feel like
But I like Annie. I like her.
I feel like you were in our conversation that we had while we were discussing the book. We just finished recording that, and it's like every single thing that you were just cringing about was the same stuff. I was like, stop saying that you're the best at everything. You're not the best at everything. Stop it. Yeah.
But that's like what makes it. That's what makes it fun and funny is you just like these repeat lines. You know, just like everyone just says I'm the best in my family at this and at that and at this, and you're like, okay, Annie, chill.
I mean, to be fair, she did disarm a bomb and she did shoot an axle out of a moving stagecoach with a northwestern
it's
breeze.
It's been a few weeks. And it was all moving,
and she was balanced on the back of a horse.
I forgot.
Thank you. Thank you. She can shoot the hairs off a caterpillar's back. She can shoot cigar out of Frank's mouth. She can shoot literally in real life through a playing card. Let's not dismiss this mad girl's skills. God. This mad girl's mad skills.
She's the best at everything.
And Calamity is... She's the best at everything.
Oh my God. I forgot all about these things.
She makes friends wherever she goes. No enemies.
You...
borrowed the book.
Oh my God.
You had your natural lobotomy already. It's fine.
Listen, when you do a book a week, it really a lot of time passes between. I think Calamity we recorded in mid-April, and it was like peak pandemic, and it was just like, what's happening with my life? I'm recording. So every week there's a book. There becomes a bigger and bigger gap the further you get away from it. But I did watch the authors were recently they a bookstore did a sort of not Instagram live, but similar to this, like a Zoom live in.
They did a live tweet thing the other day as well.
And I got to listen to them read. They actually, the three of them read, and that was a lot of fun and getting to hear, like, and reminding myself of the moments that they were reading from. So that was fun. But yeah. Anyway. Yeah, Jane. Jane's my answer.
Me too. Definitely.
Cool. We actually spoke to Geordie, Cynthia, and Brody after... the second one after my play Jane.
Nice.
And yeah, they were like, it was just before Calamity being released and they wouldn't tell us a thing. Like, come on, tell us, just give us a little smidge. And all they would say was that Frank Butler was hot. Come on, people. Spoil things for me.
They're smart. They know what they're doing.
Okay.
Oh, man.
No.
Okay.
Vexing.
Next question.
Okay.
Would you rather be a guru or a guru hunter?
See, now, why can't I just be both? Because they are. So why,
that's my
this
question.
This is a trick question. Why can't I be both? I would say I want to be both because isn't that what Jane is? She's a guru and a guru hunter. I'm going to circumvent the rules of this game and say both. Rules schmooled.
We have rules?
I am going to do what I want. So
I'll join you if that makes you feel any better.
Okay, thank you. Come out on this limb with me.
It makes more sense to be a guru and a guru hunter. You know, you're putting the bad buffs down.
Well, in safety, you know, if you're a guru and a guru hunter, then no one's going to be hunting you because you're like, hey, man, I'm a good guru. I'm on your side. Don't kill me.
Hey, it's clearly not me because I'm a hunter. right? Mm-hmm. I'm not the guru. Mm-hmm. That's totally.
Check me out wearing my full, like, you know, cowboy hat like Frank did when he turned up at the door in the gym. He's yes. like, hey, Jane, I'm a guru. And he's like, check out my hat. And I dapper.
Or you could be, you know, Jane and accidentally have a mustache.
Imagine if Annie Oakley was a guru in those dresses. Yes.
That would be fantastic.
You want full corsetry and a mustache.
I would wear a corset and a mustache at the same time. I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
Yeah, man.
In fact, I might do it after we get finished recording.
Well, that might be your cosplay That's this your week.
Evening if you want it.
I was going to say, there's your cosplay for the week.
There it is. Mustache and corset.
You do you, Amanda. No judge.
Can I also wear a cowboy hat?
And a hat. And the hat.
Okay. Happening.
Yeah. Hat.
Yeah.
Definitely hat.
This is happening. Claire, did you answer this question?
If it's waist up, then it's going to be... I'm just going to join you. I'm going to be a groom. Might as well get hairy ones.
Okay, great.
Happens naturally anyways.
Yeah, right?
I'm a woman. I'm used to monthlies.
This is also true. This is true.
That was part of the conversation with Jesse Walensky too. Period rage. No. We talked about that too.
Oh my God, it was. Period rage.
Yep, that was good.
The unfairness of having it. And to be fair, Jane does mention in the book that she turns into, it was that time of the month and that time of the month. When she's in the jail cell, I think it was.
That was just bad luck.
So, you know, double whammy. That does suck.
No wine that or sucks. Chocolate nearby. Or in my case, sushi. Sushi would be my...
just whiskey. Terrible, terrible whiskey. Ooh, sushi.
Yeah. I don't know why that's my stress
eat. I'm going to eat so much sushi once lockdown's lifted. It's a delicious stress
it
eat.
It really is.
Technically our lockdown has eased somewhat, so like shops have started to open and like hairdressers and things will start opening.
We are
soon.
In the same situation you are,
but we're in a very similar
the
numbers aren't going down, the numbers aren't going down at all, and they're not, but even then our government's not enforcing things like face masks. The only place that you have to enforce them are on public transport, and that's it.
See, everywhere I go in New York, everyone's masked everywhere you walk, everyone has a mask to do everything. And then but then like I see like videos of like people I know who are like in Kentucky or Tennessee, and I'm like, where are the masks? I don't understand. So I think people in New York are taking it pretty seriously, but we are the New York numbers are down, but the country's numbers are up overall. But they are starting to, you know, lift. They just phase one just happened, and like the next thing, phase two is like outdoor seating for restaurants and haircuts. So anyway, enough of that.
I went to the supermarket at the weekend, and there was me and probably not even half a dozen other people with a face mask on.
Oh, see, in my neighborhood they wouldn't let you into the store. They would yell.
I would prefer that way.
Yeah, they yell. Oh, and it's also, it's New York, so when someone yells at you in New York, you're like, oh. They're like, hey, you can't be in here. You can't be in here without a mask. And you're like, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't know. And it was just really funny when it started happening. It was just like, or like one bodega, they had like a 5-person, it was like very small, like a mini market, you know? And like there was only 5 customers allowed. And this 6th person came in. Guy was like, you can't be in here. And they're like, oh, I wanted milk.
Yeah, it sucks.
All right, we should get back on track.
Anyway, what? Yes.
Okay. I don't know where we are.
What's our next question, Claire? Okay. It's your turn.
Next question. Would you rather be a crack shot with a gun or skilled with a whip?
Well, okay, wait, here's the thing. I can see the practicality with the gun, but the whip, so I would go with whip simply because I was obsessed with Indiana Jones as a kid and I wanted to be Harrison Ford. So I was like, not a little thing like I'm a little girl going to stop me, but I was obsessed with Indiana Jones. And so I'll go with the whip. Yeah, that's my answer.
That is literally my exact same answer. So thanks.
Yes, 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 yes. Everything yes.
The one that I'm obsessed with is Last Crusade, because my grandparents, so I'm from New Orleans, and my grandparents lived in Mississippi about an hour away, like right on the Gulf Coast, and we would spend our summers there, and there's nothing to do. There's no cable. You just go into the woods and like build a fort. And but they had two movies on VHS. They had Mississippi Burning, which is terrifying, and it's about the civil rights movement, and it's a great film. Terrifying when you're 8 years old.
Yeah.
And then they had Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. Actually, this is a really good side story, actually, and it involves England too. So I was obsessed with Indiana Jones Last Crusade, and so we just watched it over and over and over again, me and my cousin, so I know every line to it. And then fast forward to that program that I was telling you where I met fellow narrator Jesse Falinski. This is like 05, 06. I'm in London in Camden Town at the British American Drama Academy for the year, and they would take us to see shows all over London. It was fantastic. And we went, at the time, Kevin Spacey was running the old Vic. He was running the old Vic, and they had just done a production of Richard II. And it was quite good because he was Richard II, and then basically all the other British actors around him, you know, it worked because his acting style was different than the British acting style. And so they usually, when we go see a show, they would invite one of these actors back to do a workshop with us, like the 50 American college acting students. And they're like, we got someone from the show. And everyone's like, oh my God, Kevin Spacey. And they're like, no, Julian Glover. And everyone there was like, huh, who? And I was like, oh my God, it's the back. It's he chose poorly. He chose poorly in Crusade. He's the bad guy in Crusade who drinks the wrong grail and turns into the skeleton. And everyone's looking at me like, what's wrong with Sophie? I'm like, oh my God. And so
this is fun, girling.
So he does this, and everyone's like, he's a great actor, but you know, I mean, now of course they know who he is because he was in Game of Thrones and he plays one of the old pervy dudes.
Yeah.
Anyway,
the one that died, the
children stabbing him or something, I don't know. But this is 05, so this is pre that. And so I got him to sign a piece of paper because my grandmother's house got washed away during Katrina. It got washed away because like they have a pier like right on the Gulf, and then they rebuilt it. And on the day that like they were like, yeah, we rebuilt it, like the big celebration, I got her DVDs of Mississippi Burning and Last Crusade so that they would always be there. And I had laminated the piece that he had signed and I gave it to her. And it was one of those moments she was like, oh, and like you realize like that meant nothing to her and everything to me. Like you realize that it was more I gave it to her and I was like, and then recently my grandparents, both of them passed away 6 months apart. And so my family is like trying to sell their house and they have so much stuff because she was an author. She was a children's book author and illustrator. She's filled with books. They're going through stuff. And I'm like, guys, look out for Last Crusade DVD. There is a signed piece of paper in there. And I'm like, I gotta get it back. Anyway, sorry, that was really long-winded. But that
Did you get it back?
No, the thing is, they're in a sea of World War II DVDs, you know, because they were like that end of the World War II generation. So they just constantly consumed World War II movies. So just stacks and stacks of that stuff. So they haven't found it yet.
Oh my God. I hope they find it.
I know. Anyway.
That's amazing. That is amazing. So yes,
the whip is my answer.
The whip is your answer, yes.
Long story short, I'm picking a whip.
Don't worry, you're gonna edit this, right?
Oh yeah.
Okay, good.
But no, I'm leaving that story in.
And that's
that story has how to stay in.
Blood became the best actor ever.
Oh, I love it so much.
Okay.
Oh man.
You see, the Last Crusade's got that like the line of usually chose poorly. That has it's always got to be used. It's always got to be quoted. And then when you chose wisely. Yes, yes,
yes. Or just you chose yes. poorly, or just I told you, don't call me Junior.
All of the Indiana Jones movies are hugely quotable and absolutely delightful, and there's only three of them.
I know. Well,
it's a little known fact, there are only three Indiana Jones movies.
We ignore that fourth one. We pretend like it is the one that they couldn't. That's like the Stepford Wives of Indiana Jones movies. Because remember the new Stepford Wives they made with Nicole Kidman? It's like they couldn't decide, were the women drugged or were they robots? Remember, like, they could, like, halfway through the movie, like, they, like, she finds the robot. I'm like, wait a minute. I thought it is that they were, like, hypnotized and they're now, like, perfect. Now they're robots? Make up your mind. Like, I felt like that with watching the Crystal Skull. I felt like that. I was like, this is...
Stop. You see, that movie lost me with the fridge in the prologue.
Oh, no. And the
you
gopher...
can't survive and you kill a fallout in the fridge.
It's the dancing gopher for me. No, thank you. We don't need to see that. These don't need to be tied together in that fashion. Don't have the dancing gopher, please. It's unnecessary.
Yeah, I just like, I just, yeah, let that natural lobotomy happen. And
it happens repeatedly.
Like a fart in the wind, you just let that go. You don't give it a second thought.
Leave it off.
Okay. I'm keeping it classy. Keeping it classy. Keeping it classy.
Thank you. Thank
you're
you.
You're welcome.
You are our style of person. So thanks.
We're keeping you.
Yeah, we're keeping you forever now.
You can live in the same box with Jessie as well, so you need to have a friend.
Yeah, because we're keeping her too. So, mm-hmm. Yes.
There we go.
Okay. Next question.
What questions?
We're asking questions and talking about something? What? No, we're talking about Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, which is clearly the best one. Sorry, I just have to get that. I'm sorry.
Moving on.
Ooh, fight.
No, because we'll be here for hours. No.
We might be. That's okay. We can come back to that afterward. You're not busy. You don't need to go to bed or anything. So we'll just come back to it.
There is a meatloaf in my oven I do have to take out in 48 minutes.
It's going to be burned. Okay. No. Can I just tell you that's really funny because I am cooking meatloaf for dinner tonight. Are we the same person? Because I feel like hilarious. We're the same person. It's really weird.
Yeah, I popped it in like 5 minutes before I got on this, but it needs like an hour and a half. Anyway, go ahead.
Okay. So next question. Would you rather split up and search for clues or have gotten away with it if it weren't for you meddling kids and that dog? Because clearly this book is full of Scooby-Doo all over the place.
Wait. So in one of them, I'm clearly the Scoobs, and in the mm-hmm. other one, I'm the evil person, right?
Yeah. Do you want to be the good guy or the bad guy? Really? Let's just boil this down.
Well, in Scooby-Doo, I would be the bad guy, but if we're going by Scooby-Doo rules, they're going to get caught. So I'm going to go with good guy on this. So if we're playing by Scooby-Doo rules.
Okay. But are you going to go with Fred and Daphne? Are you going to go with Velma? Are you going to go with Shaggy and Scooby?
Velma. She seems like good people. She seems like my kind.
Just help her find her glasses when she inevitably loses them.
Yes, I will.
I'm going to give Velma a chain for her glasses so when they do fall off.
She needs a little, yeah.
They're obviously ill-fitting. If you wear glasses, they are fitted so they don't fall off
your
face. Well,
good glasses.
So she's obviously not got the right option.
Like I actually, not to bash, like, I had, like, some Warby Parkers. I got a very sloped nose, and those things kept slight. And they didn't have the little things at rest.
Yeah, I have some plastic frame ones that don't have the nose feet things. You've got to get specific ones that fit your ridge. And I was trying to get a pair and the optician wouldn't sell me them because he said it doesn't fit your nose properly. So I'm not going to sell you them.
That's a good darter.
Can I just say that I like nose feet?
No, but they are like nose little feet.
Wait.
I don't think that's a proper term for it. But
could be. Nose feet.
Nose feet. They look like little feet.
Could be. Like little dwarf feet.
I don't know. I've only worn glasses most of my life. I don't know what they're called. I do have like proper like indents in my nose now because I'm wearing glasses for so long.
Oh my God. I usually put my glasses on at night. But they have the new ones now where they have like the blue light thing. But the problem is that it reflects blue light. So like if I were wearing them right now, you'd see like these little blue squares like over my eyes. It's kind of distracting. So then I have to take it off. Take off the glasses if I'm zooming, but yeah.
I have reflection issues because of light sources being everywhere. So I tend to do that and look over my glasses, proper librarian style.
I like it.
Really good. It's really good. Claire, which group are you going
to
be in?
Too cheap to buy them to Glenn. I'm going to be in with, well, I actually did dress up once as Daphne from Scooby-Doo and went to Edinburgh and we went on a ghost hunt in a graveyard.
Oh my God.
I'm there. That's me. My dress was custom made by my mum. Thanks, Mum.
That is delightful.
Anywho, what about you?
I always am the bad guy. So I'm going to have to be caught, taken, you know, and have the creepy mask on. I'm going to have to be the bad guy and shake my fist. You meddling kids.
You meddling kids.
Swearingen does have a lot of class in this, you know.
I don't want to be Swearingen, though, unless it's a time with an accidental mustache.
Yes, of course. It'll be an accidental mustache Swearingen. It's not going to be Jack McCall now, is it? You don't want those awful teeth.
No, no. Ugh. No, thank you.
I could smell it reading the book. It was disgusting.
No. Mm-mm. No, thank you. Grotesque.
Oh, God, he was fun. He was fun.
Just kept thinking, Jack, you're a dick. Anywho. Next question. Final question. We have a final question.
Oh, my gosh.
Would you rather find out your dad is a guru after thinking him dead or find out that your mom is still alive and is also the bad guy?
I mean, I think I'd rather...
So I'd rather be Frank or Jane.
I mean, I think I'd rather find out that my... Find out it's the one... Does your dad is a guru? I think
yeah,
that.
After thinking him dead.
You thought he was dead, but now he's alive. And a guru.
Yeah.
But you can work that out. Whereas, like, you can't really work out your mom being an asshole.
No. No. That's a tougher one to deal with.
Thing is, though, she's an absolute asshole all the way through. Like, in memory form, she's an asshole. In actual sitting there, she's like, yeah, I'm being an asshole to you, Jane, but you're going to take it because I'm your ma. It's like, no, Jane.
Oh,
Jane.
No.
Jane Pest.
I know.
No. At least if you think your dad's dead and have a funeral, you're going to have a cool party as well.
Yeah, so. Hey, he's back!
And you also find out that he's Bill and Ted.
And you can have excellent adventures.
Yeah.
Oh, it might be a bogus journey.
I hope it's not a bogus journey.
Oh, they just released the trailer for the new one, I think.
I've not watched it yet. Am I going to be sad?
I have not.
You're going to be sad. It's a little stilted.
Oh no.
I think that those characters, when they played them when they were younger, it wasn't too far of a reach, you know? But now I feel like I'm watching two older guys trying to play dumb.
I can't reconcile myself with Keanu Reeves not having a beard. That man is hot with a beard. He needs to have some facial hair. He's far too clean in the trailers. And I'm just scared. Don't ruin my childhood with this Bill and Ted movie.
I don't want to watch the trailer because I'm going to be sad. And I know that I am.
Yeah.
I've stopped watching trailers because they tend to put the best bits in the trailer. And then when I go and see the actual movie, I'm like, eh.
Yeah, they do that thing now where it's like, I feel like I've seen the film. I don't feel like I have to go.
Yeah.
I don't know. The art of a good trailer. It's like very specific. I thought the one they did, I don't know if you guys saw 1917, but I thought the trailer that they did, at least in the States for that, it was great. It was suspenseful, but it didn't like, I was still shocked and surprised and enjoyed the film. I didn't feel like it ruined it for me. I don't know.
That's it. The only trailer I saw was literally him running down the beach and that was it.
Yeah. And you're like, wait, what happens? What, you know, like you're just like,
yeah. It was the same as the Kong movie with Tom Hiddleston and Tom Hiddleston and the Godzilla movies where they actually show them and that annoyed the life out of me. It's like, do not show me Kong. Mm-hmm. Do not show me Godzilla. I need to see them when I get
reveal,
to the movie.
You know,
Even if it's in the first 5 minutes, that's fine. You've already got me ticket money. It's fine. But wait for that kind of thing to be in the movie, not at the end of the trailer. It takes away the whole...
I agree.
Drives me crazy. Anywho, Amanda, is your dad a guru and alive? Yay! Or is your mom alive and a shitty person?
My dad is a guru and he's alive. And he's also Bill and Ted. in a good way.
Yeah. Same.
Good. Yeah. Same. I feel like we agreed on pretty much all of them, except for the Annie and Jane question.
Best
yeah.
One. Yeah. But that's because I'm the best in my family answering these questions.
No, you're not. Give me proof. Shut up. Stop saying it.
I'm going to give my mother your address and she's going to write you a note.
I'll have you know my mommy thinks I'm great. No, my mommy thinks I'm great.
My mom could beat your mom.
Oh, no. Moms are punching each other.
Not the case. No, my mom would not
be able to my mom would be there with a martini like, I'm not going anywhere. I'm just going to...
My mom would bring baked goods. She would bring excellent baked goods.
My mom would erupt in flames and punch someone in the face. That's where I get my rage from. It would happen. And it would be delightful.
So my mom's bringing fresh baked bread and lemon drizzle cake, and your mom's rage. Okay. Nice. Yeah.
I have some really good stories, like childhood stories of my mom doing things, one of which I'm going to tell you about because it needs to happen. I have a crazy aunt. She's very crazy. She brought a gun to a Christmas party, and my mom karate kicked it out of her hand. It happened.
That seems almost as dangerous, right? Because what if it hits the floor and goes off? Like, it's not. It doesn't seem like a very like efficient way to disable the gun or the person.
But it happened.
That is the most American story.
I was about to say this. You're so misrepresenting us. You're just gonna think that we all bring guns to Christmas parties.
No, I already do.
I did. And she knows. Claire also knows that I grew up in Arkansas. Well, and that's very an Arkansas thing to do. Kick a gun. Yeah.
I mean, you know, Louisiana, so.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. We're the same.
I do have American relatives, but, like, they grew up in California and then Virginia, which I think is completely different.
Don't people. Mistake. They think that California, like they think like hippies and long hair and bangles. There's like weird parts of California too. There's like crazy conservative people I'm just telling you, don't let the California state fool you.
No, I mean, they're probably a bit more liberal, my relatives.
There you go.
They're not red. They are not red. They're definitely not red. Can't be. They definitely can't be. Because Trump would now not have let them in the country. So.
Oh my God. Such an embarrassment. Anyway. Yikes. Okay. Well, that's the end of Would You Rather.
That was magnificent.
Oh, what a great ending.
There was nothing about that conversation I don't love.
So many wonderful tangents. So many.
So good.
It's a nuanced conversation.
So okay.
So whatever now... that was, it was not nuanced.
Trying to add some class.
Class, that's right. Class. Pinky out. All right. Yes. I'm ready.
Get your teacup.
There's nothing in it.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
My posh teacup's at my mother's house.
Now we have some other questions that we want to ask you. And I'm excited to see where they go. Because I have a feeling we're going to throw them all out and just talk about random shit for another 30 minutes. And that's...
I need to get back to the Indiana Jones film. I feel like I need to put a poll on our social medias now to say which one's the best one.
Temple of Doom is the best one. I'm sorry. I love Willie Scott. The poll.
You can only vote three.
I used to do that dance in the beginning.
I bet you do. You still do.
Yep. Anyway. Yes. So, as we were discussing a few moments ago, and you were cracking up about something, I don't remember what it was, and you said you couldn't remember whatever it was that happened in the book, but is there anything that you can think of that made you laugh while you were recording? Because clearly there are lots of funny things.
This book was...
Read the book to me.
This book was pretty funny, and you have to... I'm someone who... I normally work in the city, in the studios, and I'm with an engineer So I don't normally record at home. Obviously, that's changed. So when I record now, I have an engineer with me who's Zooming live, sometimes even Zoom controlling my computer and engineering me remotely. So I do have a person. So when something comes up, you know, you're like, what did they just say? And they're like, yeah, I heard that too. I think Jane just always cracked me up, especially just because sometimes she would just be slow to catch on to certain concepts. And they'd be like, Jane, but there was another guru. And she's like, what? She just doesn't get it. She's just like, it just takes her a minute.
Oh my God, when she's trying to find out Frank, that was just ridiculous.
Like, yeah, the whole thing with like, yeah, or just like Annie and her, just like Annie just being like, well, I just think we should be best friends and we should talk about everything and we should get to know each other because I think we're going to be best friends and we're going to be doing the show all over the place. And she'd be like, she's just so like not on the same wavelength. And so just playing those two, I would often break. We'd have to like punch me back in with the marker just so that I could like make it a clean thing because I was laughing so much.
Fantastic. I loved just hearing them both in my ears, like, oh, there they are again. I love it. So good.
I feel like I can relate to Annie's desperation. Like, let's be best friends and do everything together now. Pickle.
I love how she's immediately best friends with everyone she meets, though.
Oh yeah. I would say that those.
She doesn't have friends.
Yeah, she sort of.
I mean, she did spend 2 years of her life as a prisoner for a horrible murderous guru family. She didn't have any busy mates at that point. And then there's Grandpa Shaw, her mother, who is negligent in a little siblings who she looks after. She doesn't have friends.
Yeah, but she's that person that like worms her way in, you know what I mean? Like everyone knows that person. Like, they just get in there.
I feel so seen.
Pretty sure it's me. Yeah.
I thought it was me.
The other thing that I thought was just, I always cracked up was whenever George the dog
of George
would speak.
Yes.
And I purposely kind of made George this sort of deadpan internal thought voice. I didn't want to do too much to George because I thought what George had to say was funny enough. I didn't have to add a weird voice to it. So I definitely enjoyed George the dog.
I kept forgetting that George was a dog.
Me too. The first few chapters with George mentioned, I was like, wait a minute. Wait, George? We're rubbing his bone? Wait. Yeah. That's good. George was great. George was my favorite character, I think.
I agree. I 100% agree. So did you actually read or listen to the other Jane books before you start getting into My Calamity Jane?
No.
Did you know the pop culture reference rich archive you're going to delve yourself into and puntasticness?
So the great thing is that I have a fabulous team of researchers too. So I'm not all alone on this. So we map everything out. We know where all the characters are, when they appear, any kind of vocal qualities, physical qualities, just personality qualities. And then we cast it. As far as the other two books, I didn't have time to, an audiobook, as you know, it takes several hours and I'm usually making an audiobook, so honestly by the end of the day I don't want to listen to an audiobook because I've just been making one, but I do listen to clips and generally I can get a feel. It doesn't take long. You can listen to a 5-minute clip and get a really good idea, and I did do that for both those books just because I want to make sure that, you know, every book that I approach is different. If you go on Audible and you type in my name and you listen to all the different samples, I'm not going to sound the same. The pace might be different. The mood's different. If it's third person narration can mean a lot of different things. This one was a very involved third person, right? They'd be like, hey reader, it's us. You know, all of a sudden they like chime in. And then other books, that third person voice is a little more pulled back. So I listened to that. The authors for this particular book, so if you remember in the other two Janes, both the narration and the dialogue were with the accent, right? So the narrator, third person voice was also British, and then the characters are British. For this one, the authors actually specifically asked that I not do that. They wanted me to have my normal neutral accent, and then for the characters, put on that Western twang. So I knew that they wanted that to be different. And I also knew Catherine Kellgren, who unfortunately is no longer with us, was a fantastic narrator, pretty well known amongst other narrators. And she, I don't know if she did Plain Jane. I forget which.
She did Lady Jane. And she does and like these. Fiona Hardingham did.
Catherine was known for these sort of pretty over the top voices. So when I saw that they cast her, it kind of was a huge indication to me that this was something I could have fun with and be a little over the top and campy with. So.
Yeah, because the first two were both British, very, very British, mm-hmm. like almost Monty Python, Blackadder-esque. Mm-hmm. And to go from, you know, the southeast of England to then going to America, it's kind of almost like you don't really want to then kind of see what's been done before because it is its own separate mm-hmm. beast.
Yeah, and I
but the pop culture references coming out of the wazoo.
Oh my god! I mean, come on, Spark Joy! I couldn't stop laughing.
I forgot about that one. Oh my god! That came terrible.
Yeah, remember that moment?
It's like you can tell when they're written.
Why do you do
that
like that? Because it sparks joy. Yeah, you can tell when it's written. You're like, it sparks joy, and I was like, oh my god, amazing.
We were saying about the Marvel Hulk bit as well, where she's like, the sun's coming down. It's like, yeah.
Sun's getting real.
Cheesy as, but in a delightful way. I love cheesy things.
There was definitely some dialogue that was like, I don't know, there was like a back and forth dialogue. There's lots of stuff where like all of a sudden you see the joke and you see where it's going.
Yeah.
Yeah,
there's like a massive amount of setup and then boom, it's like the bit in the stagecoach when they're all tied up and Frank's pouring his heart out.
He's not there
for a fact that Annie is not there.
She's gone.
And then somebody's like, ta-da!
Yeah, and then I remember that. I remember like, she's gone. She's not there.
Also around that same time, there was a Maximum Effort, which I really, really enjoyed that little Deadpool thrown in. We have to use maximum effort. That's why I said it, because we need maximum effort right now. Like, oh, okay, that's why. That's precisely why you said it. Very good. So good. So we know that you love Jane, but was she your favorite character to be, or maybe since we know that Jane is your favorite, did you have trouble voicing any of the characters?
No, this one really. These characters came pretty easily to me. They came off the page and were very clear to me in the writing and who they were. And they were just so very distinct and different from each other. So there was no mistaking Annie Oakley with Jane, you know what I mean? Or Bill with Frank, or, you know, I don't know. It just, for me, Jane was fun because I just, sometimes you get a character and I'm not saying I am Jane or I'm like Jane, but like maybe there's like one little tidbit of my DNA that is, do you know what I mean? And I was like, I when I saw her and I read her, I went, oh, okay, I know this, I know what we got here. Like, you know what I mean? You just like, you know that you're getting it. And so for her, it was just like riding a bike. It was enjoyable because it was so easy to be in that world of her and think like her. It was enjoyable in that way. But also Annie too, in her own way too. That sort of like, you know, Western Hermione Granger, which is like, I mean, do everything perfect, and then you know, you're just like, oh my god, you know, just like,
yes, exactly. Oh my god, that's it, Western Hermione Granger. Yeah. I've been trying to put my finger on how to describe her best, and you
doesn't take a breath. You know, doesn't take a breath. Like, oh boy, I can't wait to get on the road. What do you think we're going to do first? Are we going to throw the whip, or are we going to shoot some guns? Guns are my favorite. Did I tell you I'm the best? My family says I'm the best in my family. You know, everyone's like, oh.
And then they put a dirty rag in her mouth.
Oh, pretty.
Oh, you know Jack McCall's wiped his nose or something with it.
Yeah. He's picked his teeth.
He doesn't really have teeth.
Jack McCall is just fun because all of a sudden he just like pops out of nowhere. It's like, hi, Jane. And you're just like, oh, God. It's this clown.
Creep. Creep. What a jerk.
Oh my god.
Oh yeah, she's like, hey, how are you doing? evil, but he's just like this like happy evil guy. Oh man.
The entire time waiting for him to shoot Bill as well. I'm like, just get it done. Let's get it done. Let's get a Deadwood. Let's get the poker games going. Oh.
You know it's coming. It's coming.
Yeah, dang it. Dang it. So throughout your week-long trial of doing My Calamity Jane and all those voices going through your head, was there any life lesson or final thought that you would like that you would pluck from the book? We always ask everybody this question. What is the life lesson from either doing or reading the book My Calamity Jane?
I would say for me, Calamity Jane, like, not every book I'm going to do is going to be a book I love or is even that great. This one was a really great book. It was well written and it suit who I am as a person. I was well cast. I am a good fit for this book. And that's always a great joy. And I have always been, you know, I've been an actor my whole life, but I've also been the little weird one. You know what I mean? Like, I was always the kind of the runt of the litter, like in my class of like 30 kids, I had like, you know, dirt on my nose and like, you know, huge knot taking up half my head. And like, and this just shows you when you let your freak flag fly and you lean into what makes you, you can come up with gold. And so for me, it just was reaffirming in the sense of like, oh yeah, this is my skill set. I get this and I'm leaning into it and I'm not shying away from it. So for me, it was just, I don't know if there's a lesson in that, but it was just sort of reaffirming. And again, I got this like peak pandemic. So like, it was a nice gift to get amid like mid-April New York panic. We're all like, oh, can I go grocery shopping? So it was really nice to get don't go grocery shopping. So it was really nice to get something. And also when you get things like that, and I now know all the publishers and all the producers at those said, you know, publishing houses, and they know me, like we socialize at like various things in our industry, and it, you feel seen, you know, you feel like someone has seen that part of you. Because when I'm at a lot of the social stuff and a lot of, you know, when I'm doing most of my audiobooks, they're pretty serious. They're not terribly comedic. And I remember when I first got a book that kind of was like that, it was like this super dark humor book. It's called Bunny. It's really messed up, but it's super funny and it's super dark. And I felt seen. I felt like this is not because this producer listened to me. This is because this producer saw me in the halls at Penguin Random House and I was being my typical goofy self. And they're like, huh. And they retained it and then they cast me in something later. So Calamity for me also felt like that. Felt seen. So I don't know. Let your freak flag fly and lean into it. That's the lesson.
Every freak finds a family as well.
Exactly.
And definitely doing this book.
Yes.
Oh, man.
Yeah, they're found family for sure.
So how'd you get into doing voice acting? Let's get out of the book. Let's go to your real life. How'd you get into doing this?
Origin stories.
How did I get into voice acting? So, okay, so like I said, I'd always pursued acting. I'm from New Orleans and I went to an art high school. I spent half of my day at a public high school and I would drive over to the art high school and I studied acting and then continued on in college and eventually got into grad school here in New York at Columbia University. And so I moved to New York. At the time I was in Chicago and I moved to New York. And towards the end of that program, you know, they do like a big showcase and all that kind of stuff for agents. And they didn't teach voiceover at all. It wasn't like a thing. And it really isn't in most programs. And I think where I record a reel and started trying to get in front of agents, got in front of a small agent. And then I got a big national ad. I got, it was the voice of Airwick for about a year.
I listened to those commercials and I was like, holy crap. I know this.
I was in the air. Everyone's like, do it. And then I do it. And they're like, that's it. And I'm like, yeah, it's microphones make everyone sound great, you know. But anyway, so, but you know, commercials and all that stuff, it's fine. You don't really, even a very successful voiceover artist, you don't book them that often. And I loved everything about voiceover, and I kind of started to investigate audiobooks. And I was at some sort of industry workshop, and someone had mentioned, oh, the audiobook people are having their big award show, the Audies. This is like 6 years ago. And, but they have this after party that we can go to. The after party is called the Naughties. So I
like.
And then I kept that week. I like was like, I need, there's got to be information, a conference. And there was APAC. And on a whim, I bought a ticket for this conference. And it just kind of went from taking on small novellas on ACX, which is a small subsidiary of Amazon. And it's like a free market website for authors who aren't with a big publisher, but you know, they still want an audiobook. And then, but soon after, I was picked up by Brilliance Audio, which is out in Michigan. And kind of once one, you know, pub takes you, all the others start to investigate you. And it's just sort of, now I work for them all, and it's a lovely career, and it's fun. You get to tell stories.
And then immediately forget them right after you're done.
And you have to. I mean, like, I'm still like, I'm what would be called, like, I'm still like kind of, I'm newish. I'm not like Scott Brick. Love you, Scott. I'm not Scott Brick, who's got like 700 titles or something. I'm like just about to hit my 100. I'm like, maybe I'll bake a cake. You know, like, I'm trying to like, do you know what I mean? So,
oh, you're a baby narrator. You haven't even hit your teens yet.
So, yeah.
We'll bake a cake for you. We'll celebrate with
good,
you.
Because I tried baking a cake once and it didn't go well. I burnt the bottom.
I love to bake.
I burnt the bottoms of the layers.
Mm. Yeah, we need to make you a cake. Yeah. It's happening.
Yeah.
As a person who bakes cakes, how do you burn just the bottom?
Apparently, like, I guess, like, it's the pan, the type of pan you have, like, it, how it distributes temperature is how I understand it. So while I was trying to make sure that the top had that nice golden color, apparently it wasn't, I don't know, there's a whole thing, apparently. I don't know. I'm a savory chef, okay? I am, like, killer in everything else. I did a killer Vietnamese thing the other day. I do it all, but baking is not it for
me. Baking is an exact science. Baking, you have to be precise. You can't mess around with baking. You need to.
I've done other things with baking where I've been successful. I've just never done a cake. Like, I did I'm very successful with soufflés, which is very, very difficult, which is all about timing.
How can you be successful with soufflés but not cake? Cake is
different.
Yeah, easy. Cake's easy.
Nah, I thought the soufflé was easy. I actually did that. My dad's a great baker as well, and I did that for a science project in high school. We have to always do science projects, and I sucked at science, so we just came up with a bullshit project. And we're like, what's the effect of different oven temperatures on souffles? Which, of course, we know what the effect is. It doesn't work. It has to be exact. It won't rise enough, or it'll override, you know. But we're like, great. We'll just eat a bunch of – it was Grand Marnier souffles, and we just ate a bunch of Grand Marnier souffles that entire week. It was great.
Sounds like a good project, actually.
That's fantastic.
Sensible. Very sensible.
I hated doing those forced science fair projects when I was a kid. And awful. I always cheated too. I have diabetes. And I was like, so what's the effect on eating these foods on your sugar level if you have diabetes? Like, well, I don't even have to do anything. Yeah.
I've just put myself into a coma. Are you crazy, woman? We don't do those in this country. We don't do science projects
It was always bullshit. So like the one I did in elementary school, they didn't ask anything. You just did whatever you wanted. So I had like I was like 10. And I had my bike from when I was like 6 with like training wheels. And I built a completely clear box around so you can go in the rain and bike in the rain with a clear box over your head. And I found the pictures of it the other day and I was like, brilliant. This is why I do what I do and I'm not a scientist.
So glad we don't have this type of thing in this country. No. Yeah.
So stupid.
I remember drawing a picture of a seagull at school.
Is the seagull in a clear box riding a bicycle? Because that's my new favorite thing.
It was like a perfect cube with like, it was a wood frame and like, it was like that clear plastic you get at Home Depot and you just like wrapped it taut and like stapled it and it was like on a pole attached to the bike.
I do feel a little disappointed that neither of you done like those volcanoes that you always see on American TV programs.
Yeah, I've never seen anyone make one of those. It's like the stereotypical thing that you see, like even in commercials, and you're like, I've yet to know anyone who's done that. Because I think it's just like baking soda and like, it's not like,
yeah, there's not much to it.
Yeah, I would see, this is it. If I do a science project, it will be a bottle of Cork and a packet of Mentos, and that'll be it. And I'll be like, what would happen?
I don't inside? Know.
Do it with Diet Coke and you'll be frightened. Oh. It's Diet Coke. You have to do the Diet Coke.
I do remember my science teacher did elephant's toothpaste once. That was fun.
I've done a lot of these really terrible like kitchen science experiments at the library. You know, what can I show you, children?
I set fire to the science table once at school, and it wasn't even during lessons. We were doing the, like it was an open evening for the parents to come in with the kids to say, oh, do you want to come to the school? It was a secondary school, so I was 15. Yeah. And because I was responsible, air quotes, they gave me the Bunsen burner and the three bottles of spray bottles that would, if you spray them into the Bunsen burner, would turn them different colours. And the one instruction I was given was, wipe the table after every spray. And at first I did, but then my crowd was getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and I was getting cockier and cockier, and I just honestly, I was like Annie Oakley with a gun. Hey, linked. And I set the table on fire. I was like, oh shit. And I didn't want to get wrong, so I had to put out by myself.
Oh my god.
I'm really glad you set the table on fire. And also made a weird tentative link to Annie Oakley. It was good.
Yes,
there was a genuine fire at the school once, and I did walk past it, and I went, "Eh, somebody else has sorted." it was in the elevator shaft. I'm sure it'll be fine.
No. Wait. Speaking of fire, I can go longer, but in 3 minutes, I got to pull that meatloaf out.
Yeah, I was worried about that.
I got a timer here. I've been watching. It's okay.
What's your process of narrating a book? Quickly talk about. Tell us everything that we need to know in 3 minutes. Ready?
I can do it less than that. So every book is different. So first of all, you have to read the book. And if you don't have time to read the book, you hire someone to read the book because you need to know what happens, right? You need to know if someone is presented as good and becomes evil or another. Sometimes books aren't always written very well. And you get through 25 chapters and at the end they say, he said in his thick Scottish accent. And you're like, I didn't do a Scottish accent. So it's really important to read the book and research the book. Most importantly, I write out a synopsis, and then I also summarize every chapter for myself. And then I have usually like a chart of all the characters, what page they first appear, when they first speak. Are they a main character? Are they only in the beginning and at the end, or are they sprinkled throughout? Their age, any vocal notes, they gruff, gravelly, or just personality. And then sometimes I'll just cast it. You know, when you're reading a book and you get a certain feel for a character and you're like, this makes me think of this actor. You write that down. Because when you think, you can't do a million male voices, but you can play an attitude. So if you're thinking of a certain actor and you're just playing that, that often comes across. That's enough of a subtlety change for the listener to go along with you. Because they're not going to be like, oh my God, she sounds like a man. It's amazing. Like, you're not going to fool them into thinking that a man suddenly joined you in the booth and is doing the male voices. So you're not trying to sound too much like a guy. But you're trying to make it enough of a difference. But I generally will do that. And then I just think about the feel of the book, because Calamity Jane has a very distinct feel to it, right? That just comes with experience and just doing these books often enough that your job is to figure out what the voice of the author is and how you bring that to life. How do you serve that story? Because if you're just blindly attaching one way of sounding to everything, you're just ignoring everything the author is giving you. So in some ways every book approach is the same, and in some ways it's different. So there you go.
Excellent. How many minutes did that take?
Oh, I don't
What's
know.
Your timer say?
Did I make it? Oh, my 8 seconds. 8 seconds.
Yes. Four, yes.
Three, two, one. Wow.
That was
I
good.
Am a professional. I did go that to grad school for this. So
that was really good.
That's a degree well that spent. Was really good. That was a degree
it
well
was.
Spent.
I went for the big money, baby. I was like, acting MFA. That's where the money is.
Excellent.
So where can we find you? What projects are you doing before you have to rush off and have meatloaf?
Yeah. Where can you
tell us, where can people reach you? Where can people follow you? And what projects have you got coming up that we need to
okay,
know about?
Okay, so my website is sophieamos.com, and pretty much my Twitter and Instagram and Facebook is all my name. Facebook, you'll want to pay attention to the Sophie Amos voiceovers page. And Instagram, Sophie Amos VO. And Twitter, I think, is just Sophie Amos. So things that are, God, what is coming up? That's a good thing. What are some things? One thing that just came out that is not YA and it's much more literary fiction that I think is fantastic is the series of short stories called Animal Spirit. And I got to do it with Eduardo Bellarini, who's like amazing narrator, and Alex McKenna, who's also outstanding. And their collection of short stories that I do think that is pretty fabulous. As far as meatloaf, I'm sorry.
Bottom's going to be burned. It's going to be the
no,
next cake
won't.
Fiasco.
Okay. So, I have a James Patterson book coming out. The Midwife Murders. That comes out in August. And another fun one, actually. I thought it was really interesting. It's called The Party Upstairs. It's by Lee Connell. And it's about the daughter of a super in New York. And it's about sort of class within New York and the New York sort of Upper West Side scene. And I find it pretty interesting as a New Yorker. I don't know if I can say this title. This one's really good. It's called, I'm not kidding, it's called Fuckface. Yes. And it's a book.
Nice.
It's a book called Fuckface. It's Fuckface and Other Stories. And it's by Lee Hampton, by Macmillan Audio. And it takes place sort of in the Appalachian area. And it's really well written, humorous, vulnerable, sad. They're just fantastic stories. So that's what I have coming up.
Excellent.
I love
the title for that one. Fuckface.
I know. I'm like, when the producer came to me for that one, I was like, he's like, will you do it? I'm like, will I do it? Of course I will.
Will I not just say fuckface all the time, because that's a fantastic word to say to people.
If it doesn't have cursing all the way through, what's
no point?
No point.
There's no point at all. As you hold up your pinky and eat your meatloaf.
Oh yeah, meatloaf. I gotta go take care of the meatloaf.
Yeah.
Right, thank you very, very much. Enjoy your meatloaf.
Thank you guys so much for having me. And I'll see you around.
Yeah.
We're adopting
you
now.
I wanna be best friends in real life. We're gonna be best friends. We already are best friends. I'm the best at everything in my family.
It's done. We are best friends.
And we'll go on fantastic done. Adventures. It's amazing. Yeah.
It's done. It's done. It's done.
Awesome.
Okay. All right.
Thank
bye,
you.
Guys.
Bye. That was so much fun. I loved every single thing about it. And now we're going to be best friends with Sophie Amos.
I feel like, you know, you need those like BFF heart necklaces.
Yes. We need a three-way.
Or like.
BFF heart necklace.
Or one of like the friendship bracelet things.
Yeah.
We need to have fictional hangover friendship bracelets that we just pass out to all the authors and narrators who we are now going to make best friends. And then when we have a birthday party and we sit there with our cake and our little party hat and they don't turn up, we get sad about.
Yeah.
Oh.
I wonder if we could make those bracelets. I need to look into that. So that's it for this bonus episode of Flying Over. I'm Amanda.
And I'm still going to do that Indiana Jones poll.
No, you're not. Join us next time as we discuss Poison or Protect by Gail Carriger. Contact us if you'd like to join us for an upcoming Would You Rather segment, or if you have any books to recommend. Also, be sure to look out for our next Would You Rather poll on social media, and don't forget about our book club and monthly challenges on Facebook. Until next time, remember, the only cure for a fictional hangover is another book.
Just a light bulb.
really good. It's really good.
You can find us at fictionalhangover.com, follow us on Instagram at fictionalhangover, find us on Facebook at facebook.com/fictionalhangover, and on Twitter at fictionalhangover, no ER. And now on Goodreads at www.goodreads.com/fictionalhangover. And finally, a special thanks to Liz Emerson for our music. You can find her on Facebook and on Patreon. Thanks for listening.
Okay.
I'm pressing stop now.
Yeah, me too.